What's up, world?
What it do?
Long time. We shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step two. Sorry.
Wow. Look at you. Yeah. Out here.
I wanted to throw that in there, you know.
Look at you. What, you actually rhyming on beat? Look at you growing up, evolving.
It's a song, so it's
being great. That deep. All right. So who am I? I am Sky. I am Fly from the Southwest Atlanta. Currently in the California beach cities where they got some cabanas, and I'm blessed and fresh in the Wild Wild West. And I'm with who?
What's up, world? It's your girl Sils, VA all day, two up, two down. Currently chilling. Wow. In the PNW, it's not a heat wave anymore, so that's nice.
Meanwhile, in LA, it's like hotter than hell.
Yeah, and y'all got it now. So.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it. It's like 90 degrees in places it shouldn't be 90 degrees. But anyway, so who are we? We are Shea Butter FC, a podcast featuring two Black women's perspectives on soccer, football, and everything in between.
Delivering content with soul and seasoning that'll moisturize your skin.
And lay your edges.
And deepen your love for all things Black women. That was different. So today, we took the week off last week, and so did the NWSL, so that's fine.
What are we doing?
We're back, and we bought some guests.
Who are these guests?
We bought our friends from our football pod, and we're gonna let them introduce themselves because we're good Southern. We have some Southern hospitality in our spirit. Who wants to go first, guest?
I'll go first. Hello, hello. I am Amelia Lopez. Residing in the South Bay. You know, it's funny, Sky, you said beach cities. That's how I know you're an out-of-towner, because nobody actually calls it beach. Nobody actually says beach cities, but I know what you're talking about. But I'm really close to the airport in the South Bay area. I love to rep Hawthorne, California. So happy to be on this pod.
One of my favorite students is from Hawthorne. Sorry.
I always love when somebody knows where Hawthorne is.
Okay, fine. I live in Torrance. You're in Hawthorne. Wait, so do you, is it like a nickname for the city? Do you go Hawthorne? Hawthorne, H-Town?
Okay, so yes, I don't subscribe to that, but yes, people will say H-Town. Some people will call it the Thorn.
I don't like that second option.
If they're trying to be cute, but okay. It's Hawthorne through and through.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Dang. That's fire though. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna be running my. Yeah, I lived in the Thorn.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I didn't know you were in Torrance though, Sky.
Fast. Yes, I'm in Torrance. I'm close. That's why I know exactly where you sometimes are running. I know. I live. Mm-hmm. I'm out here in the world.
Catch you on Hawthorne Boulevard one of these days.
Yeah, hey.
And who else do we have?
Yes.
That's here.
Hey guys, I'm Adriana. I'm trying to think of a cool way to present like where I'm living in Mexico City, but it's too big. It's just Mexico City. So you could say I'm chilling. I'm a chilanga chilling in Mexico City or something like
that. Hey, okay.
Out
here. Does Mexico City have like a nickname?
It doesn't actually have like a nickname, but the people that live in Mexico City do. We're called chilangos. Yeah. Or sometimes we were previously known, like legally, I guess, as like a federal district. So it was like DF. So you would say defeños. So it's like, okay. Like DF. Yeah. Defeño. But chilango sounds cooler because we have like I don't know, Mexicans have a thing with the CH, with the ch sound. So yeah, chilango sounds cool.
All right.
It's basically like DC kind of thing.
All right. There you go. I see the light.
It's the capital of Mexico. So like, I just learned this recently as a Mexican American. Like when people around Mexico that are not from Mexico City, they'll say they're from Mexico, and everybody knows what they're talking about.
Okay.
Right? Okay. I have that right, right?
Yeah, that's why people like from other cities don't really like us too much. Because we took over like the Mexican thing. Like, where are you from? I'm from Mexico, and you're like, yeah, dude, I know. We live in the same country. What city? And you're like, oh, Mexico City. And they're like, yeah, that's the way to go. And yeah,
it's such a thing. Large city, though.
That's it is. Yeah. It is. It's pretty big. And I don't. I'm in the southern part of Mexico City, so I guess you could narrow it down to just a bit. Yeah.
Who would the club team be for your part of Mexico City?
I'm pretty close to where Cruz Azul's like former stadium is. I'm actually like 3 blocks away, but I'm not a Cruz Azul fan. I'm a Chivas fan. They're like in Guadalajara, so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Other city.
I like how you slid.
I'm pretty close.
She did. She slid that.
I like how you slid into Chivas. That's cool.
We have two Chivas fans here. Okay.
Nice. See, again, with the chest sound, there's something.
No, we we don't need to.
I think the T sound also sounds very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that. Like, I knew we were going to slide into that. We up here just trying to, we focused on next season. Y'all want to talk? Yeah, I knew that was
They're going to gloat for a while. It's fine.
Wait, who's the other Chivas fan?
Oh, no, yeah, that's it. It's not, wait, it's not Emmy. No, it's not. No, no.
Oh, you're not?
No, no, no. So I root for women's soccer in general, okay. So I like the story.
You're line. A fan free agent, exactly.
No. Like for the women's side, 100%. But like okay. My actual team is I'm an America fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the response. That's the response to you.
Conversation right. Just turned a bit tense, Amy.
It always is. You know, it's really funny because like. People always give me like that backhanded compliment when I say that I root for America. They go, you know what? You're a good America fan. I'm like, what?
Oh, no. I know a few other America fans, and they're pretty great.
Most of them, yeah. Most of them are like, so I've actually told people this. I don't dislike the team as much as I dislike some of the America fans because they're just like that. Yeah, they're a pain sometimes. Not you, Amy. Thank God. But yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh man, like I can't even talk to you guys.
It's intense. It's intense.
It can be.
Sure. Yeah, I live with one, so
yeah,
I get it.
She does. She does. All right. So, well, yeah, you want to go? You go. I did intros. You go.
Yeah. So okay. So y'all have a phenomenal podcast. Yes. So let me give y'all the floor because y'all hopped up on our pod. And if you did, this should be part two of the first episode you listened to, because we were on their pod. So why don't y'all talk about our football pod, how y'all got started, evolved into the podcasting space, and then what your pod talks about for the people of the Shea Butter.
For sure, for sure. So we actually came into fruition after the 2018 World Cup. I traveled to the Men's World Cup in Russia and, you know, had an amazing experience. And we were kind of just, my colleague and I, Wiesel Vasquez, we're kind of just buzzing off of the experience and the growth that the platform, our own individual, you know, platforms had from that. And just, you know, kind of like serendipitously, the Liga MX Femenil was going into like its, you know, its first complete year, you know, year and a half. And he kind of pitched to me like, you know what, you should make a women's podcast. And I was kind of like, I'm not sure. I don't know how I feel about that. Right. Cause I had never actually hosted a pod. I had been like in the back end or I had been a guest for certain pods. And so I was like, I'm not sure how that's going to work. But Adriana and I had actually worked on the Mexican soccer show, which is kind of like the longest running Mexican English language podcast, you know, covering Mexican soccer. So her and I had worked on that, a few times before. She was a reoccurring guest. I kind of produced it on the back end. He's like, just try it. And, you know, Adriana and I were able to kind of have this rapport and it worked out really well. And just, you know, kind of like conveniently enough, we started recording around the time that the U17 Women's World Cup was happening. And that was the Históricas. For those of you who don't know, that is the most quote unquote successful Mexican women's soccer team in history because they made it to the final of the U17 World Cup. And it's really funny because Adan and I have talked about this on the Our Football Pod. That was the team that was led by none other than Monica Vergara. And so, we started it, 2018. So it's been about, I don't know, I can't do math right now, but it's been a couple years. It's been a couple years at this point. And to kind of see the growth of Mexican women's soccer to this point that we're at right now is just so cool. It's been a real blast. I mean, Adri, how do you feel about the couple of years we've been doing the pod?
I mean, we went from being like World Cup runner-ups in that historic World Cup to actually not having like having a team that didn't do anything for like almost a year, remember, with Cuellar?
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden, our coach with the U17 team goes over to the U20, and then she jumps over to the senior squad, and now she's leading us to the CONCACAF W qualifiers next week. So we've been all over the place regarding women's soccer, I think. And just watching the league grow and venting whenever the national team did poorly, not because of talent or players, just because of lack of support from the federation and lack of a plan at some point, I guess. And now we're seeing like the total opposite. It's like huge difference from one end to the other. So yeah, we saw that everything that's been going on with the league, like from players not getting paid to actually having an attendance record at some point. I think we've been all over the place regarding women's soccer, and it's only been, yeah, like 3.5 years.
All right. So now.
So here we are.
Yeah, so here we are. And thank you for sharing that out. Sky and I have talked about this before, and we've done spaces with Eugene and AJ and some other things, but of course we're really big fans of the domestic league. Sorry to you both, we're both Tigres fans, that's okay. We can all do shows together. But yeah, we really just enjoy the football. Like that's what drew us in. We're probably slightly Johnny come latelys to that, but to us it's one of the best leagues in the world. And it's such a young league, it can only go up, and it'll have growing pains like everything else does, but we're really excited, and people should check out your pod because you all cover it for the larger audience. So on your show, you were gracious enough to let us talk and rant about the U.S. women's national team.
Right.
However,
they did a great job, by the way. If you guys weren't able to listen to that one, I highly recommend it, but I'm sure fans of your guys' pod, you probably did at this point. But if you haven't, go check it out.
Absolutely. But we want to use this time to give you all the floor, because obviously you're covering the Mexican women's national team. And for people that don't know, one, qualifiers kick off, the W qualifiers, CONCACAF, kick off on July 4th. U.S. will be playing Haiti. Do you all play on the 4th or the 5th?
I think our group plays the 4th.
So we're both the 4th.
Yeah, we play on the 4th. Yeah.
Oh, so we're just doing it. Okay.
It's actually like a doubleheader. That was pretty smart. Yeah, because I actually saw, I learned this like last week. The ticket, if you buy one ticket, you get to see both games.
Ooh, what a deal. I wish our country. Well, we do that game most of the time. I'm sure your tickets are a lot more reasonable than ours. That's a different conversation. But for people that do not know, the W qualifiers will be in Mexico. And so it is rare that a country outside of the United States gets to host qualifiers for the World Cup or the Olympics. And this qualifier is for both, by the way. It's for the World Cup, and the top two teams ultimately out of CONCACAF will go to the Olympics in Paris in 2024. With that being said, I'm just going to leave it open-ended. What are your thoughts and your expectations of the Mexican women's national team?
You want to go, Amy?
Yeah, I'll start. I think just like you said, one of the really cool things that the Our Football Pod and just even the Liga MX Femenil brought out was this idea that the passion and the commitment from players has always been there. I mean, we also, I think it was in during the pandemic in 2020, we also talked about, you know, the early pioneers, the pioneras that, you know, legitimately had Mexican women's soccer on a global scale, you know, and to kind of see the trajectory of history that Mexican women's soccer has had in that time, you know, in almost 70 years, but then also looking at it more recently in the last like 3 or 4 years, there's definitely a fire there. There's definitely an excitement there where you just go, you know, this has always kind of existed in whispers. And now that we've finally handed them the microphone, they are like, you know, just taking the stage. And I think the league, when it started, we were kind of like, okay, it's not going to happen right away. You know, unfortunately it didn't happen. And I know the pandemic ended up stalling it, but we didn't qualify for the Olympics or the World Cup, you know, with the national team. And then we didn't have any activity or anything. But now under Vergara, you know, with the league in past its novelty and in top form, and then you have players in Europe and you also have players in the NWSL, it's like a perfect recipe for success. you know, and what success looks like for the women, for the Mexican national team is a little bit different, because I think there's also like these like unrealistic expectations that maybe, you know, people that don't know too much about the national team will be like, okay, well, they definitely have to qualify and then they have to win everything, or, you know, like, or like win like with authority. But I think right now just getting to qualify to for the World Cup, we were talking about this off the air, like for me, I know there's also a ticket for the Olympics, but that one's probably a little bit harder to obtain. Right now it's only about getting to the World Cup for me. And I think with all that done, all these, you know, tools finally put in place for the women's national team, I think they're in a good place to qualify. There's too many options. There's like too many scenarios that are in their favor where it feels more than likely for it to happen.
Yeah, and it just seems as though, I mean, everything turned around in such a good way for the Mexican soccer, like for the entire like national team system, because before the league, we had national teams, we had the U17s, we had the U20s, and we didn't have a league. So once the league started, rather than being like clubs feeding the national teams, it was the other way around. Like clubs were picking out like players that they knew had some sort of background out of the national teams. And it was just crazy. And now you can actually see a system working, you know, it's like you can actually, we have a U17 league as well with the Liga MX Femenil that just started last year, which was also great just to know that it's not only bringing players, and because we have foreign players right now in the league as well. We have it's limited to four, but you're also making sure that you just don't keep up with bringing in new players, younger players with that system as well. So it seems as though everything has a purpose, and it's done after investigating like what are some of the things we have done wrong, how can we avoid players joining other leagues just because, I don't know, it level stalled at some point or something like that. So it seems as though there's a system, there's a structure, it's working in everyone's favor. And now it's reaching a point that we started seeing once Monica Vergara took over the team, where they're reaching their highest point, I think, right at the moment where we need it the most, which is to get a World Cup ticket. So we just saw Monica call up so many players last year. Yeah, she lost international games, but they traveled to Japan, they played the U.S., they played in Europe, and we just saw all these players being called up. But it seemed as though, I mean, you saw some structure in seeing so many players being called up, because you could really understand that she was scouting so many players to see which one adjusts to her system the best, because all of them did. But you really want players that could fit those pieces in the right way, bringing some key leadership positions, bringing some key younger players that you know are going to be top of the game when the World Cup comes, right? Because you don't want to have all those really older players coming to the World Cup and then start off the next time, like the next process, and be like, oh, okay, here we go. I have to build a team from zero because I don't have those younger players being brought in. So I'm just really happy with the way the entire process came about. And now we're seeing it reach its highest point just before the World Cup qualifiers for CONCACAF.
I'm very envious of how your federation has built their women's team.
I know it sounds right phenomenal, amazing, it's amazing, beautiful.
What is it like? It sounds amazing.
You know, it's funny to, it's not like every federation or every place has its issues, and like I know there's like hearsay or like people say that this is only a rumor or speculation, but like they were almost forced to create this system, you know?
Yeah, like, there's that's like a huge rumor and doesn't seem too far-fetched, to be honest, because it was kind of around the same time that Mexico was starting off, you know, that the World Cup for 2026, all that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, huh, I'm starting to see like lots of conversation regarding women's soccer and, you know, some kind of obligations. Gotcha. And such.
Okay.
So
it was too coincidental for it not to be true. You know, like it was part of that bidding war to be like, by the way, we also have a league and stuff. And that people have tried to say, no, it's not true. They already had it, you know, kind of in development, and people and the owners were already talking about it. But again, it's too close in time for it to feel like, you know, not just a coincidence.
And truth be told, I have no problem that they were obligated, because the entirety, but most clubs have done a good job, or they've done a better job than expected, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm.
There's still a long way to go. You could probably pick out like six teams and be like, dude, you really have to pick it up. But other than that, I think we've been like really surprised just to see like fans reaching out. Like, I mean, I remember the first time we actually saw an official club photo with both squads, the men and the women, and we were just so happy. We're like, oh my God, they get it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's done really well.
I think it's also just like perfect, like we keep saying, right? It's just like this, these very fortunate like timing, you know, like the U17s with Monica Vergara in 2018, you know, getting that historic victory. And then the league was starting and we're kind of like, okay, we need this on the senior side, you know? And then I think, I mean, I'm not in their heads. I don't know what they were thinking, but I think the Federation was probably still kind of questioning like, well, how much should we invest on our women's side, you know? And like the Cuellar reign lasted for so long with not that much, you know, like product. Like I don't think it's talked about enough, but Mexico has, in the time that they've qualified for World Cups, which they have, Mexico has never actually won a game, you know? So it's interesting to look at it that way, where it's like, okay, we're raising the bar where we're like, I think we can qualify, and obviously we'll get into it. But then I even sometimes go, imagine if we won, like we would literally be making history, you know? Yes. And it's like, and if for whatever reason we're, you know, not fortunate, like, you know, to try to disregard, you know, other national teams' developments or their own structures, because we understand women's soccer is still struggling on a global scale, right? But if you end up getting, I don't know, like a US Thailand situation, right, where you can really kind of take it, not advantage, but just like show your strengths as a national team, for that to happen for, you know, Mexico, that would be huge. It would be insane.
Yeah. And I think from the other side, it's possible. But again, I know people are far more reserved about their own national teams. They are about others. But yeah, I think that's a good jumping off point. I think you all look really great. You've had those two friendlies. You know, I think Peru came back and tied, and then they just went and obliterated them in the second half. So you said your expectations are obviously qualifying, at least for you, Amelia. But how do you see the tournament playing out? And I guess for me, giving our audience some information, do you want to talk about maybe a few key players or like what tactics you think Monica will use? Like, just giving people a little bit of a feel about the Mexican national team. And you can also talk about the recent announcement as well with Angel City, if you want to do that. I know you have thoughts, so feel free.
I think, and Adriana, you know, we can interrupt each other as we go. I think for me, the really interesting thing about this moment is it's the first like real official competitive play that Monica is having. And like Adriana was mentioning, you know, she had, I think at the beginning of her reign, she started off with that Costa Rica win, which was strong. You know, it was like complete. It was compact. You saw these really good goals in that very first match against Costa Rica that you're like, oh my God, Mexico's about to be the best team that, you know, ever existed, or listen, best Mexican women's national team ever. And then Monica sent them to Europe, you know, and she sent them against Spain. She sent them against Japan. She sent them against the US, and we were brought back to reality. You know, like when you go against top teams, you're not going to be as good as you thought you were going to be against the Costa Rica, you know? But I think Adriana and I used to talk about this on the pod consistently. It's like, no, but that's good, because those reality checks will put you in a happy middle that maybe you've never existed in before, you know, and that'll bridge your confidence to be like, you know what, maybe you can't do it against the top teams. And that's okay if you can't do it. Again, we haven't won a World Cup game ever, but you're going to get somewhere with this national team. You're going to get somewhere as players. Just trust me, you know, that's what I feel like, that's what Vergara has told them, that when you got to that point, I think at the end of last year against Canada, and you beat them, you're like, okay, maybe they're missing some players. It's just a friendly, but oh my God, we actually have a system. We actually have a structure. Our players are actually, our offense is actually attempting to score goals. You know, you start to believe in it a little bit more outside of the absolute, you know, kind of just, I don't want to say like deity status that Vergara has, but just like this idea that a woman that cares about the sport is going to take over, right? It does give you a sense of optimism, but then actually looking at it realistically on the field, you go, okay, this is going to work. You know, you start with Licha, you start with Mayor, you have Katy Martinez, you know, you have Maria Sanchez, you know, Jacqueline Ovalle, you know, some prominent Tigres players, some prominent just goal scoring players, and like Licha. and you start going, okay, this is amazing. And then you bring in even more players, right? You bring on a Diana Ordonez, who is just like 12 feet tall and
can, yes,
you know, brings in a little bit more of that aggression that you might need against CONCACAF players. And you start seeing like a very complete team that by the time you got to the first legs of the CONCACAF W qualifiers, right? Because the US and Canada were kind of just waiting around to see who else was going to play. You know, you did see this reality that, and Adan and I spoke about it on the pod, where it's like, you know what, we have to play in this tournament as a product of kind of like our failures, right? We need to play in these first rounds because we're not Canada and the US, but we're absolutely dominating these teams, which is what you need to see. So that when you get to the, when you finally get to this qualifier that we're going to get into, you know, next week, you're like, okay, they have the confidence, they have the structure, they have the buildup, that our offense is confident enough, they're going to score some goals. I'm really excited to see how this happens, you know, this tournament, because now our defense is going to get challenged, and they're going to get challenged in a way that's not top European status with Japan and Spain, but it is CONCACAF. And this is, you know, like we talked about on the other pod, this is the beginning of a new era in CONCACAF, where, you know, just to kind of compare it to the men's, you're going to get this very interesting dynamic within your region that I'm really, really excited about, that I am really interested to see how Mexico is challenged. And of course, while having the home field advantage, it should be beautiful.
I think it's just crazy how many like different circumstances are going to take place next week. First of all, first CONCACAF qualifiers outside of the US, Mexico coming in halfway, I guess you could say, I mean, they're peaking right at the moment they want for these qualifiers. Obviously, they'd have to do it next year if they get the World Cup ticket, but they're at their point, like regarding the plan. You have the US transitioning from World Cup winning and changing coaches and all these injuries we talked about in the first part of the pod. But again, yeah, you're looking at the CONCACAF teams, and I don't think anyone should be overconfident of what they can achieve, because if you look at the rosters, you see that these are players that are playing professionally, despite what some people might think, just looking at CONCACAF or thinking what they know from the men's side. If you look at the women's side, most of these teams have players that are playing professionally in Europe and France, and it's not going to be as easy. I mean, yeah, it's going to be an environment that's different for everybody, because truth be told, Mexico sometimes plays more games in the US than they do in Mexico. Mm. So it is going to be entirely different. But regarding Vergara's squad, I mean, the thing that stood out the most, despite seeing, I have no idea how many players she called up last year. She probably called up over 80. It was just so many players, but it was just fair. I mean, it was something that had to be done, not only because you know some of these players and some of them were coming in through the league, but also because some of the players were forced to skip a generation because of the pandemic and all those tournaments that didn't take place. Yeah. So you had U20 players that didn't play that World Cup, and then now there's nothing else to do except play for the senior team. Because unlike some countries, Mexico doesn't have a U23 women's side. You go straight from U20 to the senior team. Okay. So you also have to take into consideration, are we bringing in those younger players? Are we giving them a shot? Is it too early? Am I going to burn them out just by calling them up and just putting this entire like huge pressure on them? But still, I think the entire year Monica took just looking at these players and testing them out as a squad, because she was kind of like loyal to her system. It was more like a 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 sometimes. But you could see that system sometimes despite moving around the players so much. And yet you started seeing, again, also like a personality at the end of all those call-ups. You could start seeing players that were getting it as a team and not as individual talent on the field.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and I've seen it even just, like you said, within the last year, and I love that she called up like 80-something players. That's what you're supposed to do, particularly when you're building. But I certainly see the growth, and I like that they went to Europe. I watched that Spain and Mexico game, and honestly, for the first half, you all hung with Spain. Like, it wasn't, that was a really good showing, right? And like you said, yeah, you're humbled a little bit in the second half, but it's how you grow. That's how you get better. And I've seen the value of that trip to Europe and playing Japan and playing Spain. And how it's grown Mexico. So yeah, we're certainly excited. Like we said, from the outside looking in, obviously we're from the United States. Begrudgingly, we root for the national team most of the time. But yeah, I certainly see Mexico as a threat. And I guess getting into that, we're in the same group. We're in group A for qualifiers. So you all start with Jamaica, and then you play Haiti, And then it's the big one, right? It's the U.S. versus Mexico. So how are you feeling about Mexico versus Jamaica?
Mm-hmm. How's that feeling? How y'all feeling about
that? I feel like Jamaica is a competitive team, no doubt. I think you go into this tournament not underestimating anybody. Like, I know we're focusing on Group A, obviously, because of our teams, but, you know, like, yeah, Group B is also going to be kind of, you know, it could be surprising in its own shape, way, or form. So I don't think you go into this underestimating Jamaica. I think it's a better first game than Haiti, just because I feel like Haiti, and we talked about this on the other pod, I think Haiti during the first round of qualifiers just absolutely scored so many goals that I didn't want to deal with that the first game. I think Jamaica is more like, historically speaking, leveled against Mexico. Like, it's always like a very close, like, one or two goal game.
Okay.
I think the last time we faced them was probably for the Olympic qualifiers, and, you know, Janae Cuellar scored the goal. So I think that'll probably be a similar approach that Mexico is going to take. You know, it's probably going to be a little bit more defensive than they're used to. But I think Mexico has also shown that they have so many different ways to score goals, right? Whether it's in the air with Diana, whether it's off free kicks with Caro Jaramillo, whether it's just, you know, Licha's ability to be in the box and kind of tap it in. I think Mari Carmen is also one of those players that just, like, she's just focused on scoring and by any means possible, and that she's able to get her goals. I love the way that she scores. That I think those options alongside a more defensive approach, so not so much like a counter, but just, you know, just like, just make sure Jamaica doesn't get one and just, you know, try to get one or two. I think I could see this being a victory, but a challenging one where they have to be more compact than they've had to be against other CONCACAF teams. But historically speaking, I think Mexico always comes out with the upper hand, that, you know, it's kind of in their favor in a sense.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, because also one of the things that Mexico has struggled with as a nation, disregarding the sport, is mentality, right? Mm-hmm. Anytime you're down by a goal or a score or whatever, I mean, we see this time and time again during the Olympics, during World Cups, during whatever game you want to tell me. It just, coming back from being at a disadvantage is so hard. It's just one of those things that we struggle with, like, culturally. And I think Vergara has somehow adjusted and made sure that isn't a problem with this squad, because, yeah, they've been in tough situations, but you don't see them, like, really crumbling due to those situations. You actually see them trying to make it through. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't. But still, just making sure that mentality doesn't beat you, I think, is really, really important, because we see it time and time again with every single squad. You're like, oh man, we just got a goal, or we were just beaten by this or that. And it's like, now it's going to be twice as hard. And it doesn't have to be twice as hard. It just has to be hard. Yeah, that's it. But if you keep working with the plan as you were, it's really likely that you're going to come back from it. And I don't know, it's just something that you see in the squad, you see in the personality, you see it in some key players that taking on that leadership position and making sure that others feel the same way. And we're like, dude, we might have just gotten a goal against us, but or something, but that doesn't mean the game is done. It doesn't mean we can't score twice. It doesn't mean anything. Let's just keep on going forward.
Absolutely. And then I know you touched on it a little bit, but how's that Haiti game feeling for you?
Wait, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
What do we think? Are y'all, what is the score? Is this 3 points, 1 point, no points?
I think it's 3 points.
Okay.
But I think it's 3 points, but I wouldn't mind a draw. Like, I don't mind a draw, just because I don't think we should underestimate Jamaica. So you kind of go, okay, let's not go for the draw. But if it's a draw, like, I don't think the team will be disappointed. I don't think I would be disappointed. But again, I think the margin has always kind of been there for Mexico, that I'm more leaning on the 3 points.
Yeah, I'll go with 3 points. And I mind the draw. I don't want to suffer and, like, do math, like, during the tournament. Like, okay, wait, if we get, like, 3 points in the next game, but then the U.S. gets 3 points, and then we're going down to, like, goal differential. And then, I don't want to do that. I want the 3 points all the time.
I feel that.
Okay.
All right. Sky, do you want to go? Because I feel like I'm talking a lot. So.
Well, I mean, so the next game is y'all play Haiti. How are we feeling about that game?
It's a goal fest, I feel like.
Yeah, go. You get a goal. I get a goal. Everybody get a goal.
Yeah, like it's, I feel like that game is going to be much more open. Like either it's going to be much more open where the approach is going to be like, hey, let's score first. So don't try to play so defensively, which will open up the space for Haiti, who's also very confident in their goal scoring options, that, yeah, it's going to go back and forth. Or Mexico switches it up and is slightly more defensive, but like is not used to that, that they're going to struggle just a little bit more. For some reason, I feel they're going to struggle more against Haiti than they would against Jamaica for whatever reason.
Ooh, so that's interesting.
I think it's going to be a lot more physical. I think that's where they might struggle with. Like, I think it's going to be a lot more physical against Haiti for some reason. I think that might catch them like off guard at some point.
Yeah, I just feel like Haiti is going to be a testing point just because I forgot what Haiti's goal differential was in the first round. I think it was like,
it was obscene. I can't remember.
It was like 44. It was like 44, 39.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That I don't think they're used to that so much. I don't think they've been used to that one in their last like maybe like 5-6 games that they've played from like against CONCACAF teams, that, you know, like that's just gonna like kind of surprise them. Like either it'll surprise them and be like, holy crap, they're gonna score goals on us, or they'll feel confident in what they've been able to do to the other CONCACAF teams and just completely dominate them. But I feel like the first scenario is far more likely.
Okay.
Okay.
So are you looking at 3 points or maybe this one's a point?
No, nah, I'm probably going to go with 3 points for this.
Okay, we're out here. Okay.
Well,
yeah, I'll go with 3 points as well.
So three points means you're probably good, right? You qualified. Most likely.
That's the plan.
At that point,
catch me after the Haiti game and see how I feel. Cause honestly, I just need that World Cup ticket and I'm set. Like that's my goal. Like I don't care about anything. I mean, obviously we've mentioned this, like we want to go into that US game with not too much weight on our shoulders, but literally just having that ticket, like just knowing that we're going to be in Australia/New Zealand next year. That's really all that matters to me. I don't even care about the Olympics at that point. Like I just need to know that we're going to be in the World Cup again.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the World Cup is the bigger one for sure.
Yeah. All right. So then
that's like the first natural step. And then if you make it to the Olympics, I mean, just understanding it's a way smaller tournament, you know, you don't have that many teams qualify, you know, it's going to be that much harder. So if they make it through, I think they're actually I think this would be their plan, get that World Cup ticket and then be second or third. And then you're going to play out, you're going to have an international playoff with the other team, which is second or third. And then that will decide the other Olympic ticket. But as long as you get the World Cup, I think that's it. That's the actual goal.
Okay. Yeah. So then what about this last game?
The US.
Yeah.
At the Universidad, that's going to be crazy. I can't wait to see like how fans respond to that. I mean, for people that don't know this game, both the entire tournament is going to take place in two stadiums in Monterrey. One of them was the one that had like the attendance record until some, like, I think it was, was
Barcelona.
It Bilbao? Oh no, this was even before than Barcelona. So like Real Sociedad actually took it away for a Copa del Reina match. They smashed that record and tore it to pieces. And then Barcelona came and smashed everybody's record twice. That's one stadium. That's the Monterrey stadium. And then the other one is their huge arch rival, Tigres. But Tigres fans are crazy. You can just like Google this, like look it up on YouTube and put like Tigres games fans at Universitario or something. And you'll see it's crazy. And that's where the Mexico-US game will take place. So I've never seen, I mean, we rarely have Mexico-US games in Mexico. There have been some, but they've been in Cancun for like another like World Cup qualifiers, I think it was at some point, or like the U20s or something, where we actually beat the US. I think it was in penalty kicks. But that's it. I mean, we're not one used to seeing the women's national team at all in the country. I mean, that's something quite new, to be honest. Others, pandemic also happened, and that also like fans had to weren't allowed at the stadiums at all. And then after. Yeah, like going over that huddle, I think now people will actually see their national team with a system, with a, like an official tournament, you could say for the first time, at least this generation. So it's going to be crazy just to think you're going to play the U.S. current World Cup champions at a stadium that has been known in Liga MX Femenil for being like the 12th player for any single game. I mean, these are the fans that have seen their club go unbeaten the entire tournament. So knowing that these people, that these fans are going to get a national team game during a World Cup qualifier, it's just going to be crazy. I really can't know what to expect with that game.
You got to pick one. Is it 3-0-1?
Oh, see, I've been saying it from the very beginning. I think your high bar, like your high, like I'm satisfied with this, is a draw. So for me, that's why I'm like 3 points, 3 points. Like, I don't see us winning this game. And I would be very, very happy if we draw against the U.S. I know that we also discussed on the other pod the craziness that's happening internally with the U.S. women's national team. But I don't see the rivalry like quite there where like we could gain some dominance over them, so to speak. Like if we can just keep them, out and maybe get a 0-0 draw, or you get like a really good confidence boosting 1-1 draw. Those are good scenarios for
if
me.
You can neutralize them. Yeah. Not dominate, but just neutralize. I think everyone will be really happy because even that will be really like a tough job to get done.
I think it's a really good, like almost poetic, like final group stage match, you know, like you'll have seen both teams and their trajectory in the first two games. And then for Mexico to host this at home in, Monterrey has been a really good, you know, just kind of like spectacle for Mexican women's soccer since the Liga MX Femenil started, to see it there. With all the home crowd, I'm more than certain the U.S. is going to bring their good share of fans as well. But I feel like it's just like I feel like it's a good recipe for, you know, what, you know, the El Tri Femenil is made out of. And I think it'll be a really great test for the players. I think just like you guys have mentioned online and even, you know, during our conversations, you know, I think a player like Maria, I think, you know, Diana as well, who are in the NWSL and getting that experience, but even for like, you know, the Liga MX Femenil players, I think there's another level of, you know, not necessarily validation, but just kind of being like, you know, this is our home country, right? And we've grown as a product of a league that barely started, but guess what, we're making a name for ourselves, we have a confidence, and to kind of, you know, go toe-to-toe with literally the current world champions, I think is going to be it's going to be interesting to see if they do live up to that, if they do start strong and just come in guns a-blazing and, you know, just kind of give us all like a really entertaining game.
Nice. Who do you have winning the tournament?
I think Canada.
That's fair. Me too. Me too.
You guys don't have the U.S. winning it, right?
I think Canada's the most complete team in the tournament.
Yes.
I think they're good on, I think they're real above average on every line. And for my money, I think Gilles and Buchanan's one of the best center back pairings in the world. So I think that's really hard to score on.
And they also have Ashley Lawrence. Jesus Christ.
They have
Ashley Lawrence.
They have Jade Revere. Like, that back line is one of the best back lines.
And then the midfield is bomb. The midfield is solid. You got scorers everywhere, and they can CONCACAF you and actually score. So I mean, you got the balance of everything.
One of the best goalkeepers. I think the biggest issue I have with Canada is I don't think they're aggressive enough in attack, but I also don't think they have to be all the time. So I'd like to see it more, but that's because that's the type of soccer I like. So
yeah. So who's the other team coming out of this other group that Canada's in?
What's that? Panama, Costa Rica?
It's Panama, Costa Rica, and Trinidad and Tobago. Oof. I'm leaning towards Costa Rica.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The most sense, yeah. I feel like.
But if Panama snuck up or Trinidad and Tobago. I wouldn't be surprised.
Players, though.
Who had the higher goal difference? Was it Panama? It was Haiti. Like, who was the up there? It was Haiti.
It might have been Haiti and Panama. Oh Lord Jesus.
Panama had a good qualifying tournament. Yeah, I think I'm leaning Costa Rica just because they've done it before. But I don't know. Panama's got some players, including
it was
Marta Cox, right?
yeah, It was Panama. So Haiti had 44 as a group. Then it was Mexico in second place with 34. And then it was Panama with 22. And then Jamaica and Costa Rica both had 22.
So 44 gold. Wow. That's wild for a qualifying tournament.
They didn't have a single goal scored against them. That's crazy.
Oh, man.
Well, Mexico didn't either, but you also scored 44 goals.
So. Right. Right. And I thought Mexico scored a lot of goals. So, hey.
Oh, Lord. And we're all in the same group. What for? Why? Okay, it's
fine. Yeah, that seating could have been better.
Yeah, yeah. When I saw the groups, I was like, I'm not entirely sure this is the best way, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the good thing is, like we were just talking about this, fans getting, like, if you buy one ticket, you actually get to see both games. You get a doubleheader. So it's going to be really great because fans, well, the thing the Federation was really, like, coming out and saying like, hey, look how smart we planned this out, because they're saying any day you go to see any game, I mean, well, any couple of games, you're either going to see it Mexico or you're going to see the World Cup champions or you're going to see the Olympic champions.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool if you think about it, because I was like, yeah, that was smart. Then you look at the groups and you're like, okay, could have been better, but let's go with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, I agree with that, and we're going to assume we'll take the optimism for you. We're going to assume Mexico qualifies. The Mexican national team will then be available or will be in Los Angeles, California. Is it September 10th?
What is it? I think it's the 5th.
It's the 5th. I'm a week ahead. But yeah, they just announced last week that they will be playing Angel City. I guess we're calling it a friendly. So I know you all have opinions.
We're calling it something. So one of the things about this is I believe the press release stated that it is a Soccer United marketing kind of, deal, so to speak. They're the ones that helped organize it. And for those of you who don't know, some, which has historically catered to the men's team, and that's why they have so many friendlies here in the U.S., they're now going to take that partnership and essentially, put it with the women's national team. So they're part of the new, most recent SUM deal that the Mexican Federation closed with SUM. The Wells Fargo also recently announced that they're going to be the first official sponsor for the women's national team here in the U.S. You know, so there are perks to this and there are positives to this that I'm excited to see come to fruition. I'm not that happy with this being one of the first things that they announce as part of this new deal, just because if we're going to compare it, and I get that I don't know for sure if, men's national team fans translate over to the women's team. They should, right? They should come and support the national team, but you would not do this with the men's side.
Yes.
You would absolutely not schedule a club team to play against Mexico. Just think about that for a second. That's like saying LA, or let's make it more appropriately, LAFC versus the Mexican men's national team.
Right.
What? Like why? I want to understand how this happens. And then our good friend Eugene actually pointed this out, that that date coincides with an international FIFA date. So Angel City is going to be missing some players respectively, but Mexico's giving up the chance to play an international friendly that could help them with rankings. So it's I get it, right? Because if they're playing at the bank, I've gone to Angel City games, we've gone to Angel City games. It's a good time. And the bank in general, regardless of men or women's football, soccer, fans like to go there. Fans like going to that stadium because it's an experience and it's a good time to just go. So I do expect sales, revenue, all that to benefit both the teams. And that makes me happy. But just the concept of the game itself, just doesn't really make all that so much sense to me.
Yeah. And the consequence, I mean, again, if we get that ticket next week, which we're really planning to, you really want to make the most of the entire year you have to prepare for that World Cup tournament. And facing a club, I mean, yeah, you want to get activity and you want to get games in, but I'm not entirely sure a club is the best way to go about it. I applaud the effort. I obviously love the fact that they're going to get way more games in the US, which I would take with it like a grain of salt, because we've seen this with the men's side, and I only fear it will do the same with the women's side. I mean, on one end, yeah, you get resources, which will allow you to travel to other places and get tournaments in and just make sure that the team is always has what it needs as like economic, like financially wise. But on the other hand, you just don't want to have the games because you have a contract that obligates you to those mm-hmm. games, because sometimes you might risk players coming off of injuries or just a really tough calendar like we just had because of the pandemic. Sometimes you won't really get much out of those rivals that were just available on that day, and you really need to have that game. So maybe it would be better off facing some other team in some other country for preparing for a World Cup or any other tournament. So I just don't want them to lose what they could, like sports-wise, what they just because you're going to have the resources because you're playing in the U.S. I don't know. I hope they find a really good balance to make sure that everyone, it's a kind of like a win-win. But yeah, I agree with Amy. Just facing a club during an international date is probably not the best way to go. I mean, I would have tried to look for that, even if it were only with league players. Like, if you know you're not going to get international players or players from abroad being on loan for a game, maybe just getting that like a Liga MX national team face off against Angel City some other time, which also happens on the men's side. We get these friendlies mm-hmm. when you can't really bring in players from abroad because they're not obligated to let them go. Maybe that would have been better use of time.
The men's side is not, again, scheduling games with clubs. Like, it just,
Yeah, there's also that. I mean, it's weird, though, that you're facing a national team with a club. It's just, I don't know.
It's pretty rare. It is pretty rare. And I, again, appreciate that perspective because I'm probably going to go to that game because I want to see the Mexican women's national team. That's helpful to know.
Yeah. 100%. I'm going to this game. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm going too. It's there.
I'm still going to be there. I think for me, it's like those little nuances because I also, again, I understand that, for instance, when you look at, kind of like the sum deal with the men's side, right? Like men's national teams that face Mexico want to come to the U.S. because it is dollars, right? And it's all that stuff. Do we have the infrastructure globally for, women's soccer to do that? Right, like the expenses to come to the U.S. and who's going to actually opt to come to those friendlies, right? I'm sure it's in the works. I'm sure it's going to happen, but maybe for their immediate timetable of like we need to get a friendly for Mexico in September, maybe this was one of the more viable, quote unquote easier solutions that came about, but. There are consequences to it, and maybe we get a fun game, and we have entertainment and all that stuff. It just, it sits weird with me, like Adriana put it, right? Like, you just finished in theory qualifying for the World Cup. What is this exactly going to do for the national team kind of thing? Like, what benefit does it have there from a national team structure? And also like you can't even really talk about like a national team. You're going to be talking about a club, right? So you're never really going to face them in actual competition, realistically.
Yeah, it's like an unrealistic scenario. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I don't know. It's you win some, you lose some. I don't know. I think if we could ask like someone from the federation, I'm guessing the response would be, well, we probably still won't know who we're facing for the World Cup anyway. So
there's nobody
take this with a grain of salt. This is me just being funny and bantering, but it'd be really funny if like Mexico signed like Angel City signed a Mexican player. Like, who would they play?
I mean, I would want several of them, but yes. for my team, and we have a Mexican national team on my team, but yeah, I can think of a few that I'd go.
I can think quite a few.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I'm just saying, if you get called up for international duty, you're going to be at home because you're not going anywhere.
True.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, if we had, I only hope that this also opens up the possibility, have, this conversation regarding a club tournament, a continental club tournament coming along. So that would, I don't know.
That might be part of it. It might be part of it.
Oh, yeah. I could totally see, Tigres, saying, hey, look at us. And we've won Liga MX. Let us play anybody at the NWSL, again. I mean, they've done it with Houston. Do it again or do it regularly or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're doing it, I think Angel City and Tigres are playing as well in August. But yeah, I think one, I long for a CONCACAF Club World Cup, like for the women. Like that is a dream of mine, as is a Club World Cup in general. But yeah, I'm definitely excited. Obviously, we'll pay attention to our national team, but honestly, I'm really excited to watch like Mexico and Jamaica and Haiti and Canada. And so, yeah, I'm not rooting against Mexico. I know that's a weird thing, but yeah. I'm excited.
All right. So, was there something? Wait.
I was just gonna say that I was also looking at the rosters for some of the teams some of the national teams, and you have some players that are undrafted at this point. It would be really cool if some of them got actually like scouted from the tournament and joined, I don't know, a club in the U.S. or even a club in Mexico. That would be really cool.
I love when things like that happen. I agree.
Yeah, that actually might be fire. Maybe that is something in the works.
Maybe.
And so speaking of some, okay, so we're going to switch it to some of our segments before we wrap up.
Yeah.
So on our show, Pimp My Squad, Get Your Fits Right, where we look at the intersection of culture and soccer. So I guess our question for both of you, what would you like to see from a national team perspective in regards to Mexico? And then I guess even for Liga MX Femenil on club levels, what do you think could be done to make it more inclusive? Feel like a more inclusive experience, depending on how you feel the vibe is, or what would you like to see that on the women's side for both in both capacities that you might not have seen currently? In addition to that, would there be like a concept of like customization of cleats and jerseys you would like to see in the future? So,
Adri, you can go first.
What would I like to see? Sometimes as a culture, and I think we've done this quite well. It doesn't mean we couldn't do it better. I think we could be more open about certain conversations. I mean, we just had an entire gay parade last week here, which was huge, and tons of people went out to the city. And we have several players that are really outspoken about LGBT rights and making sure that people are respectful and really educated about how they can approach people and how they should talk about this and everything. I would love that the team actually took that as a mission on their own and not left it only to the players. So I would love for them as a team to take that that role as well, because we do see it with some of the players. I mean, we have two players on the national team who are married just like a month ago, Stephanie and Bianca. And they actually have their Instagram account, which is her and ella. And they post a lot about this. And it would be really great if the team like went on board with that as well. And this is also coming from players that have a history of being, they were let out from the, I mean, the previous coach, like two coaches ago, they had this issue with one of them when they came out as a gay couple. And so if it came from them, just knowing that they have this history of being, I don't want to see if it's neglected or they were just like let down by the team whenever they came out as a gay couple. And now seeing them both with the national team again, not having any issues with coming out and just being who they are, it would be amazing if the national team like came on board with that role and supported them just as outspoken as they've been on social media and in person. So that would be awesome. That's one thing. And then the other is regarding customization of cleats and everything. The cleats would be awesome. I'm trying to remember if we've actually seen players do that like on their own for league games. I'm trying to remember. I don't think so. I mean, some of the players, I mean, some of the bad things about Liga MX Femenil is that some of the players have to like really invest the really like poor salary that they're getting into cleats. And so just thinking about them actually customizing them is making them spend more money than they're actually getting from their clubs at some point. But it would be awesome if, I don't know, if we had like the rainbow numbers on the jerseys, for instance. I saw that in the US, I've seen that in several squads, teams, clubs. That would be awesome for the national team as well. And that's something that, again, the team could support them with and not expect the players to do it on their own. You have that. Maybe the captain's armband as well could do something with that. I don't know. What do you think, Amy?
I think for the Federation in general, something that we've talked about quite a lot, and people on the timeline have also mentioned it, you know, from like the U.S. soccer side, that I think is a really valid point, is when it comes to this discussion of discrimination and everything, it's more of like explaining it as a erasure of the punishment, so to speak. So like, don't do it because we might get in trouble, instead of announcing it for the real contextual reasons. And I think women's players specifically do a really great job of explaining those nuances on their own platforms from their own personal standpoints. But in terms of like just the national team federation, just like the Mexican Federation in general, when it comes to their campaigns and everything, I think that there would be a better approach in explaining contextually, instead of just saying like, don't do it, or let's not do it because we're going to get in trouble. That I think culturally would benefit us all in the long run too, because I don't think we have those discussions enough where, you know, we kind of, you know, to not get too millennially, we don't, you know, break that generational trauma, or we kind of just leave it at a certain point. And that's it. I think we could do more far beyond that from the national team standpoint. And then from a league standpoint, I think that there are some nuances within fandom and within even the more like even the more veteran people that have been covering the league, where like that kind of sensationalism is starting to come into play that we've seen so much from like the men's side, that I would like for us to do a little bit more reflection sometimes, you know, to kind of like, not to be like super hipster about it, but just like to remember where we came from when like Adriana's saying, right, we respected players' pronouns, or we started to correct, you know, other journalists if they said the wrong name or confused the wrong player. And we're kind of getting to this point now where the league has lost its novelty in a good way, and is gaining prominence, and now it's like not clickbait, so to speak, but it's like, let's get, you know, let's get sensationalist takes in there for the sake of just getting them, that I would like to see that kind of like go away again, and us kind of get to like this happy medium point of like, this is why we cover the league, this is why we do these things, that I think would just benefit, you know, everybody, whether it's new fans, old fans, you know, people that are covering or people that are starting to cover it in like a much better way.
Thank you for sharing that. That was actually super helpful and enlightening. And we'll do our part always to make sure we're bringing shine both to Liga MX Fem. And again, we're both fans, so we're watching regardless. And we try to share that out with our fans as well. And we just wanted to bring you on to our show so that you could do that. And I hope they learned something today about the national team and the league. But if you're not watching Liga MX Fem by now, come on, y'all.
Come on. Get better. Do better. It's yeah. Easy. You ain't got no potato cam. You got quality. Well, wait, anyway, there's a balance. Yeah. But there's ways to see the league.
There are always ways. There are always helpful people out there.
Yeah.
Yes.
They all be looking down. They always looking. If you're in the social media spaces, there are ways to see things. Oh, yeah. It's awesome. I love the audacity. I love the want to. A game is never over. I know in my household, we watch all the games all the time. And we screaming all every time it shows up. So, yeah, it's cool.
Speaking of hipster things, Adriana and I always talk about this. We're past it now, I think, at this point, because you know, streaming and everything has now paved the way for more amplification of the Liga MX Femenil. But there was a time, believe it or not, where some gracious person in Mexico would stream from their phone on Facebook, their TV, and in order to not get broadcasting like rights like taken away or like violate broadcasting rights, they would tape the logo of like the person that's, you know, broadcasting it on their TV so that we could all enjoy the game.
Oh yeah. My goodness.
and then the best part was that like sometimes people would like talk on the chat. So they'd be like, hey, can you scoot more to the right, please?
Yeah, your phone just moved just a bit. There you go.
Just a bit. Or the person would say, like, go watch it somewhere else then, because I'm not moving.
Or right. Well, I often say, well, so fans are the most dedicated fans, because the ways we've had to consume women's football over the past couple of decades, man.
the 90 pay-per-view, all that.
They are so handy and they're so resourceful, and they're like better detectives than some of like the top-notch private investigators. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So usually our last segment on our show is going to be our hits and riffs.
Yep.
So yeah, I think our guests should go first. If you want to, you don't.
Well, yeah, wait. So for hits and riffs, you pick your favorite songs of today or tomorrow, whatever. You can pick two or what, if you got four songs, if you got two, I know we are just pulling songs out the air. But yeah, we usually give our slow jams, the slow songs, or your turn-ups, the fast songs of yesterday and today, because we're old. Yeah, if y'all got some songs, what are some of y'all favorite songs y'all are listening to, I guess?
I'm literally like opening like Spotify just to see what I've been
Yeah, just pick your top four. Your recently played.
My, I'm going to go super basic, but in the best way possible. I have no shame in this. Right now, it's all about Bad Bunny. So
let's go.
Okay. My favorite song right now from the newest Bad Bunny album is El Apagón. So I would recommend that one if you guys are into it. Yeah. As far as slow jams, one of my favorite songs to listen to right now is Wildfire. I don't know who sings it. I'm going to search for it really quickly, but it's a really good song and I've been enjoying it a lot. Who is the person that sings Wildfire?
I have like, this is really old.
Cassius Clay sings Wildfire.
Okay.
So that's my slow jam right now.
It's not slow, but I was listening to Guns N' Roses because they're giving a concert here in a couple months.
Oh, wow.
So, I was listening to a bit of Guns N' Roses, and yeah, actually I have like a rock classics playlist. So I have Kiss, I have Queen, I have Red Hot Chili Peppers.
there are a few men I love more than Freddie Mercury, so I'm with you on that one. those are good choices.
I have that David Bowie.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well yeah, all of it. Like yeah, I too have a rock. I have many playlists. So yeah, I feel you on that. I love rock. So yeah, Sky, you want to go?
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. So I put one. So it's summertime. It's hot. It is officially like 76 degrees in the South Bay. It's too hot. I don't pay all this rent and money for all this heat. This is not why I'm here. But anyway, let me see. So Pontoon by Little Big Town, because I'm country and it's making me reflect. And also my mom's birthday was yesterday. So she's a diehard country fan. People don't know this because they're like, this black woman likes country like that. I'm like, yes, she's from Nashville, Tennessee. And that's all that she listens to, with funk, soul, R&B, all that. But yeah, dedication. Let me see. And then some Shantae Moore.
Wow.
Loves Taking Over. Not that other ridiculous song. and I'm literally like pulling up my let's see. Did I do Ain't No Fun by Big Crit?
Probably not. Khalifa. You've done
Big and Girl Crit, Talk. Yes. But they got an album I found a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And I was like, I know they had an album. So that's my other one. And I ain't got no more. You got like 50. You took all the songs.
I do not. I did two and two, like we usually do. And yeah, I grew up listening to country. One of my mom's favorite singers is Patsy Cline, and I too love Patsy Cline. So
yeah,
she passed that on to me. Shout out to my mom. All right, mine are, I just did slow jams and fast turn up. So my two slow jams are Breakthrough by Jazzy Fat Nasties, who came out like when that resurgence in Philadelphia artist hit in the 2000s. And then the other one is Breathless by Corinne Bailey Rae off of her first album. And then my two turnups, in honor of whatever the heck happened at the end of the longest U.S. national team match yesterday. Girl Fight Remix, Brooke Valentine. That's a name for a certain generation. It's also got Lil Jon, Debrat, and Remy Ma, who for real went to, like, fought for real and went to prison. And then... I didn't know I had five. Sorry. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, you got a lot going on.
I'm gonna skip that one then. I'll do Explode Big Frida only because it's part of the sample for Beyonce's new single, Break My Soul. It's that, and it's Robin, Show Me Love. So I wanted to give a shout out to the original creators of those songs.
Banger. Such a banger.
It is. I mean, extended, she sampled well.
Version or not extended version for you.
So. Also, yeah. and shout out to house music, techno music is black mm-hmm. music. Please remember that.
It's always black. It's black game. It's black queer music, actually.
Yeah, always has been here. Always mm-hmm. will be here. People saying that it's coming back. Like right. It's always been around.
It's always been here. You just exactly. didn't know about it. Y'all weren't paying attention to it. That's and that's why I tell people, I'm like, what techno are you playing? Are you playing techno that I can dance to, or are you the mess? That's what I'm not even gonna talk about. I'm not gonna roll straight today.
They're playing the jump up and down.
Yeah. Know, yeah. They're playing that no bass line.
They're playing that loud noise and bright lights music.
Yeah. There we go. That oomps, oomps. When I'm like, yo, get an oomps, oomps. When you can have I was gonna crack a joke because normally I was like, my gaydar goes off if I hear the oomps, oomps. If you hear the oomps, oomps, because you hear the music. But no, like normally if I'm listening to stuff like, what's that, the Percolator or old school house music, that's what I used to break dance to because I am a retired B girl. So. And then we used to like push people out, RIP to MJQ in Atlanta. We used to push people out of the freaking room where we were trying to break because people would start popping and locking and shit to like the house music. And it's like, yo, we trying to break, cuz like, what you doing? But anyway, that's my last thoughts.
All right. That.
All right. So we about to wrap this up. So yes. We appreciate y'all for coming through.
Yes.
We love here.
Yes. We'll have to do this again. We'll all try to survive this tournament. I know you'll both be in Mexico, correct?
Yes.
Right, yeah, awesome. I get there on Sunday, and okay. Amy will join me on Tuesday, Amy?
Yes, I'll be there on the 5th. So I'll actually miss the first round of games in person. I mean, obviously, we'll be on the timeline and everything, but I will miss the first games in person. I'll be there for the second matches.
Okay, perfect.
Do y'all have anything coming up? Anything you want to shout out?
Well, since we'll be in Monterrey together, we'll definitely be producing more our football content. You know, we'll definitely be on FootMex Nation, just putting up, I'll have a lot of, you know, on the ground sort of content. So I highly encourage you guys to see it if you guys want to see more Mexican women's soccer content in English. You know, we'll probably have a few more podcasts than we usually do because we've been a little busy. But now that we have the tournament to focus on, we'll definitely have more content. So more podcasts on the way for sure.
Hey. Yeah. All right. So how can I reach y'all? How can I see y'all? How can I hear y'all?
So you can find me at Azteca Amelia. Our football podcast is under the FootMex Nation channel. So when you look for it on all the platforms, just search for FootMex Nation and we'll pop up there with our logos. And then Adri, you want to give them your handle?
Yeah, mine is Adriana Terrazas, which is TERRAZAS. You could just look up Amy and then there's probably like tons of conversations between both of us. So yeah.
Actually, as we said on the last pod episode that you listened to before you came over here, or you're going to listen to after you finish listening here, all the information will be in the show notes. Yes. So you'll be able to find us. Additionally, who else are we're shouting out everybody, all the 2 cents people, all y'all, because it's a lot of y'all. Yes, STC, all 50 billion people, our team, Nubia, Georgia, Kaya, 2 cents, Amobi, L, who else?
Ty, Chris.
Ty, Chris, it's a lot of people.
Yogi.
Devin.
Yeah. Devin, Yogi. Yep.
Everybody, we see you, hear you. Oh yeah, Nashville United, the tallest people
tallest in pod.
also Ebony Christmas, who Ebony Navidad, who has effectively decided to have a North Carolina edition of the street team of Shea Butter.
When you're the most famous person in US,
you tell us what to do. And then everybody in between, people we might have missed out. But shout out to y'all. Is that what we're doing?
We're gonna wrap it up because that's how we do this.
So how do we wrap this up? So what are we gonna do?
We're gonna stay hydrated.
I'm gonna say, wait, is that right? Wait.
Yes.
Stay hydrated. Stay melanated.
Make sure that the black women in your life are always celebrated.
And then we're gonna make sure Shea Butter Bombs are always elevated. See, it's I'm tired. I'm whatever. Y'all know how the outro goes. We appreciate y'all for coming through. Make sure you check out our football pod, everything. Phenomenal work. I've learned so much from them and everybody in the space. So appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. All right. Peace, y'all.